Hi, I'm Charles Galda, President of Vision New England, and your host for the Church in Action program, where we talk with New England leaders about the imperative to make disciples, do justice, and foster unity to share Jesus, to transform New England. This week, I'm talking with Reverend Dr. Ray Hammond. He's the senior pastor at Bethel AME in Boston, and Pastor Enoch Lau, who's the pastor at Boston Chinese Evangelical Church. Guys, it's been a while. Thanks for coming back and coming back to a difficult series of episodes on partisan politics.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for the invitation.
I'll thank you after we're done.
I was going to say, you might want to wait and see. It does seem a little odd that we're talking about politics and the election, given our normal focus of making disciples, doing justice, fostering unity, and sharing Jesus. So it may not seem like a natural fit. We've done a fair amount of research into what leaders believe God's been doing in the church over the last couple of years. And one of the big themes is how many of us are behaving more like disciples, less like disciples and more like partisans, taking very worldly perspectives to political issues, engaging in ugly phrases, terminology, doing stuff that really drives people from Jesus, as opposed to disadvantaging ourselves to draw people to Jesus. And so with the election coming up on us, we wanted to dialogue some of these issues, talk about them from a biblical perspective, hear from people who may not all agree and may not agree with us, hear their thinking and experiences that get them there, and recognize that it's not because we're crazy, stupid, or evil, but there's actually thought behind it, just different experiences and perspectives. And so the world's default is crazy, stupid, evil. That's not our view. And so we're going to disagree at times, I'm sure, but hopefully we're going to do it with grace and love, the way we'd want to do that, to draw people to Jesus. So with that context, let's start talking about, even before we get to the issues, let's talk about how we should think about voting at all. And it strikes me that, you know, as I was thinking about it, I'm like, at times I just want to unplug from the whole thing and forget about all of it and not vote, because I don't know that it makes a difference. And so how should we think about, if somebody's coming at it from that perspective, is that a fair way to do it as a Christian? Is that a mistake? How would you guys think about it?
You know, I completely understand why people take that view. Politics is often bare knuckles, nasty, and particularly these days. And nobody likes being splattered with mud, much less being in the mud. Secondly, I think politics for many people, particularly in the democratic system, but it's true of all politics, really feels very much like a black box. I make a vote, and what that vote bears to actual decisions that are made that do affect my life, but I have no idea, literally, how does the sausage get made? Laws, policies, regulations, and so on. And so I think the deep disconnection of many people from that system even intensifies that. So I understand why people say, I would just as soon not be involved. I do think two things I'd say to Christians and I say to citizens all the time. One, the old statement, all that's needed for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason that I think our politics is as nasty and now as paralyzed as it is because too many good people are not doing anything. They're sitting it out. They're not being engaged. And I would particularly put Christians sometimes at the forefront of that. And last but not least, I would argue in a democratic, and I know this is arguable, in a democratic system, I think part of rendering to Caesar what belongs to Caesar is participation. We're not dependent on kings to make the decisions for us. But it does require the citizens who say they value freedom, fairness, justice, to be involved. So I would at least ask people to consider the possibility that in a democracy, I mean, in the absence of a democracy, the Bible says, at least pray for kings. You may lobby as Paul did, right? But they're going to make the final decision. In a place where you, in some ways, through your representatives, make the final decision, I would ask people to consider the possibility that part of rendering to Caesar, it's not just the taxes you pay, but your participation.
Enoch, anything to add on that?
Always not eager to add after something Mr. Ray said. It was well said. But I'll tell a story.
Go ahead.
We were transferring in a member who had come from another country and is a believer and came to our church, and we're processing him. And we're going through our church polity. And I said, what are you excited about being a part of our church? And one of the most interesting things he said was, this is a guy that continues to serve today in our church. He's been very active in his college campus here in the Boston area. He said, I am thrilled that at our annual meeting, the members vote on stuff like budget and deacons. I cannot wait to come to the meeting and vote. I said, well, I thought lots of things. Rarely do I hear my church members say, I can't wait to vote at our annual meeting. Mostly it's the other way. Like, why do we have to come and vote? And he just came from a church system that is not necessarily worse or different, just different. Like, they didn't, you know, it was a kind of more the hierarchical system where bishops and people, they just make all the decisions. So he's just thrilled. And it makes me think back to, you just open up any simple textbook or blog or article about the incredibly laborious suffering journey to gain suffrage for whether it's certain racial groups, women, things like that. Like, you know, the whole idea that they lowered the age of, you know, voting because you could die for your country, but you can't vote for the president that sends you to war. So it's just, to me, if we stop and think of it that way, there are people in this world right now that would literally die and give their lives for the opportunity to cast a genuine ballot. So when someone asks me, you know, if we're talking about a podcast, we can talk about that on a big macro justice thing. But really in individual life, I usually ask them, just like you both said, is there a reason you don't want to vote? And then it all comes out like, I don't think it makes a difference, or they're just discouraged. And then I think, while we can make a good legal and ethical and theological case to vote, and we should do those things. Smart men and women have to make those cases, and people who are thoughtful have to make those cases. But at least as a pastor, it's almost like one conversation at a time, you know? And so that's sort of my thoughts.
You're reminding me, and you guys both know, I know how to work up Irish Catholic guilt pretty well for my upbringing. And so I used to work with a woman, and she would never vote. And I would always say to her, well, it's not like anybody died that you would have that right. Oh, wait a minute.
And you probably can't say that right now.
That's right. You know, Enoch also raises a point, and thank you for bringing it up, Enoch, which is politics is everywhere. We think about the quote political system. Politics is in your church. Politics is in your family. Politics is in your neighborhood and on your job. And I think we have to, part of our problem is we think about politics as supposedly the realization, the realm of justice, equity, and all these other things. And I think that's a mistake. We should think about politics as the alternative to war. How do people who think differently, have different interests, different experiences, live without going to war with each other? And that's what I think politics tries to do at its best.
And the notion that somebody hears us and says, okay, I should vote. And this was what I thought about with that woman who I used to say that to, is, but she didn't pay two bits of attention to any of the issues or anything else. And I'm like, so should I be telling her to vote, or should I be saying? Right, because then you're just picking who has the best commercials at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
And so how do you guys think about that? What is our responsibility to be informed before we vote? And what if we don't?
Yeah, I think we have an obligation with anything, any authority, skill, gift, whatever it is to exercise, to do our best, you know, and to do it, quote, to the glory of God. Whatever you do, do it to the glory of God. So, I mean, obviously that's true in every arena of my life. So I can't spend all my time, because I've got other obligations and other places where I've got to do it to the glory of God. But that means I need to bring at least some level of care, attention, thoughtfulness to it, as I would anything else that I'm called to do. So, you know, how much? Yeah. You know, I can't prescribe that. I can only say that I think we want to do it well, because the consequences are important.
And, yeah. and I think, Ray, you've made this point in one of an episode we did a while back, is and hearing both sides of it, because there are people who are paying a ton of attention to the issues, but only one side, only ever hears one side.
That's exactly right. It's exactly right.
Yeah, Enoch, it looked like you were going to say something.
Yeah, I would echo what, well, I guess we're supposed to disagree. I vehemently disagree. I think certain folks are passionate about politics. And one of the ways that is evidenced is it doesn't matter what the issue is. If everyone's talking about it or no one's talking about it, they are reading up on that. And I think there's a lot of analogy to the church. Someone could take my burden and spiritualize it and therefore almost evaluate or even judge other people. So for example, if I have a heart to share the gospel evangelistically, then, which is a biblical mandate and invitation to participate in God's gracious plan, and then I can sort of go around and get discouraged and frustrated that other people aren't doing that. Mm. Or someone has a heart to welcome people to our church. They always know who's a new person. They always see someone at church that has no one to talk to. They just know how to go right up to them, and they get frustrated. Pastor, no one cares about the new people or something like
yes.
that. And I think, I guess, in the bigger scheme of things, we're trying to understand gifting and calling, right? And responsibility, right? Everyone's called to share the gospel in big and small ways, but not everyone's called to get up in front of people and proclaim it from a pulpit. So when it comes to politics, I think we take a sort of a customized approach. If someone is interested in an issue, I tend to kind of think, okay, are you wanting to vote and getting this because this issue has gotten you concerned or, you know, maybe even worked up? That's different than you actually have a bigger issue about our political system or who runs things. And that's the accusation a lot of people say at Christians. Christians don't care. Well, some people accuse Christians of certain stripes. You don't really care unless this one or two issues come up. And, you know, the typical issues would be unless it's abortion or sexuality. Sometimes Christians don't care about other things like poverty, like equity, like education, like all these things. And so, you know, and there's theological buttresses against that. You know, like people have very sophisticated theological premises for why they get that way. But I think it's about if someone wants to vote, it's like Ray said, you're trying to encourage them as they live longer, they're going to just learn and pick up things about different political candidates or parties in the system. And if someone has a heart to like learn about an issue, then I would encourage them to, are they leading to the other side? Are they actually listening to both and getting in there? And then say that God may put you on this earth as part of your calling to help people think more carefully about our government and to recognize no one will probably ever think as much as you about this in your circle of friends or family reunions. But I would try to equip them and encourage them scripturally with like, okay, how do you do this if this is your burden? Because people have left churches like that. And then what happens is they go to a church where everyone cares about politics. And the irony is now we have lost a mobilizer to take people that don't necessarily, I get the frustration. I want to be around people that care about it already. I don't want to try to advocate for them to care. And you go there, if you go to that place that everyone seems to care about that, you can quote unquote get certain things done and create change. Mm. The irony is you actually might not have added a lot to that. But if you stayed in your family or church or friend group and yeah, I had to learn to kind of not step on toes blatantly or learn to be patient. I think an incredible personal development to be able to do that, talk to people who think very differently. But then you might be the friend that, you know, honestly, we always go on a ski trip and that one friend has gotten better. We don't talk about politics every night, but honestly, if it wasn't for that friend, I wouldn't even have read this article. I think there's an opportunity there to be a part of pushing everyone. Mm-hmm. And as a pastor of a church, we have to be, I want my children's ministry people to be passionate about children's ministry, but not judge everyone else about not being passionate. I want my worship team to be passionate about singing praises to God because it's quote, mm-hmm. what we're going to do for eternity. But you know, so I think learning to manage that. And I think same with politics. But this is very pastoral. It's about finding someone and encouraging them because if they're politically active in certain, shall I call them conservative Christian settings, they are heading into a life of frustration. But we need them. We need people to agitate and biblically irritate the body of Christ because that's really what a prophet kind of did. And so I think there's a prophetic role in there. So
and
that's
you saw
a long answer.
Yeah, you saw what happened to them, right, Enoch?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm telling you. I will be like a pastor that will work with you. And I'll tell you when I think they're about to haul you out the city gates. But I also think we need to hear those things. And there's a way to do that maybe with greater grace and effectiveness, I think.
And so let's jump into the deep end. Enoch mentioned abortion. So let's talk about abortion. In Dobbs versus Jackson, the Supreme Court decided basically that Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided. In other words, that there's nothing in the United States Constitution that guarantees a right to an abortion, which means that either state or federal representatives, or maybe even state courts, should decide the laws that allow or limit abortion. Is that a fair framing of the issue, guys?
Oh, yeah, I think it's a fair statement of the decision as far as I've read it, yeah.
I should say pastors, not guys. Sorry. And so what biblical issues should we think about in a conversation around abortion?
You know, I've written on this extensively and, you know, going back and forth. In many respects, in the political context, I think everybody's heard all the arguments. It's all been out there. Where I don't think what we haven't come to grips with is how, again, in a democratic society, we're going to deal with the challenge of disagreements around life. When it begins, when rights are attached to it, and when some rights outweigh other rights. You know, as a pastor who has always encouraged mothers, and I hope fathers are engaged in it, to give this child a chance to despite whatever the circumstances might be, single parent or whatever it is, the child, give this child a chance, who's deeply grateful that I have my one and only grandchild, because my daughter, when faced with the prospect of single motherhood, decided to not get an abortion. She could easily have done it. It would never known the difference. But I do think that part of the challenge for the church is that the pro-life movement, I don't think, has ever fully addressed the uniqueness of the pregnancy situation in which women voluntarily surrender liberty and sometimes life for the sake of a child. And the question is, again, in a democratic society, can that be coerced? Especially when a pill is all that you really need to end that pregnancy. And if we follow through the pro-life position, are we necessarily anti-contraceptive as well? So I think that the problem is we're having lots of sloganeering, lots of political maneuvering, lots of legal challenges, but we're not really facing what I think is, for like, in my humble opinion, the competing challenges here, openly and honestly. And the last thing I'll say is that it's interesting because the public, according to the polls, has been in pretty much the same position before Roe, after Roe, and even now. And that is that most people have a sense this is a really tough issue. And we don't quite know how to balance these, what I would call competing rights in a democratic context. And so they say, for the most part, before the first trimester, when the child cannot live apart from the mother, it should be safe and available. After that trimester, when it appears the child more and more is getting the ability to live independently from the mother, except in cases of emergencies, should not be legal. So how we resolve this, we can certainly continue to go back and forth over the fights within the Christian church over when life begins and what are the rights attached to that life. I don't think it's until we can sit down and have the honest conversations beyond the protest marches and the rhetoric on those fundamental issues.
And I think, Ray, what you just listed is probably where almost every state's going to land eventually, because that's where the vast majority, if it's left to play out in legislatures, right, is somewhere around the first trimester, regardless of what we personally think, right, it should be available in case of rape and incest, and it should be available in the first trimester. And so I think that's where I think that's my prediction. That's where it's going to land, but it'll take some time to get there. Enoch, what do you think? What's biblically at stake here?
Wow. Would you attach the adjective biblical? It's let's see. I really appreciate what Pastor Ray said. On some level, the lines of argument for each of the various sides, and there's actually more than just quote unquote two sides. It's a lot of nuance. It's been there. And so I feel when, you know, I probably mentally became more aware of this in the 80s and began to read books about it in the late 80s, early 90s. And I really feel like the most sophisticated arguments, like the secular philosophers use on multiple sides, the public doesn't really know or care about, because that's not really what's at stake. You know, there's just a lot more going on there. So I would, so I have a couple of thoughts. In general, as a principle, when we talk to people, we say, you know, if you're going to hold a position strongly, you probably need to have greater conviction. I mean, that sounds obvious, but that's actually very helpful for me. If you're going to hold a position strongly, that should be somewhat commensurate to a conviction. Now, that conviction could be because I believe God said so in the Word of God. Or a Muslim may say, they saw that in the Quran, or, you know, Kantian ethics, whatever, you know. But I think what gets us into a problem is strong opinions without conviction. And I think the Bible calls that legalism.
I'd add out without any facts to.
I was going to get there. Okay. Have conviction, then the next sort of stage in sort of both the individual dialogue as well as the societal dialogue, I would say, is how do we arrive at those convictions? If we generally arrive at those convictions based upon, call it feelings, then it doesn't matter what argument you make. Then the way to win the court of favor or is to sway the public through stories, which again can be very effective and manipulative. I mean, Jesus told stories, but Jesus also made a case. The prophets say, let us reason with this. So it's not like stories are out of bounds. It's just, I mean, Paul, so I think that's, if we're thinking about that. So that's what I do when I think of a group of people like a church, or if I'm going to speak on a college campus or someone I'm discipling. Where did you get your convictions? Because before you can form the convictions based on maybe what some might think are probably more sound ground, like facts or science or biblical study, if you're picking up your convictions purely by a crowd, we've got to not break you of that, but if you don't see that, there's not much we can do. There's not much we can do productively. Otherwise, if you stick you in our church crowd and we all talk enough, then we'll get you to change your conviction. That's not really the way I see it either. I don't think that's discipleship. So I think that's almost what I said is almost could be said for any issue. When we come to the abortion case, here's what I typically find. Most people really have not talked at great length with someone who has a very different view. I mean, again, if you listen to any of our other views, that's what I said about race. That's what I read about immigration. They really haven't understood. So let me explain how I really see the stereotypes. There is a group of people in our country, our family and friends, that are absolutely convinced, and they use the phrase murdering babies, absolutely convinced. When you put that out there, that probably is not going to help dialogue. There's also groups of people in our country absolutely convinced that the only real reason behind quote unquote pro-life is controlling women's bodies, particularly women of color, because that's disproportionate impact, right? So one side says, Blacks are disproportionately affected by abortion, so you know we should help and serve them. Another says, "Well, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to so if someone really thinks this is ending a human life, of full personhood, which is a huge debate, and so tries to talk to someone that honestly doesn't buy that argument, like they don't buy that certain political people are actually caring about that. So then I just think it's so difficult to get past. It's like Ray said, they've all read each other's arguments, personhood versus self-autonomy. And so for me as a Christian, when I talk to Christians, is I'm more about unearthing why you came to your view. Why do you have your view so strongly? Sometimes it takes the course of, let's talk about your experiences. And it's almost like counseling. And some of it's we have the intellectual resources and the biblical resources. So it kind of breaks up that way. So I would really... I basically challenge people, their thoughts, whatever their view is, to make them a little uncomfortable and maybe a little more diligent in studying rather than just repeating what people have said to them.
Mine's pretty practical. So I would consider myself pro-life, and I would say at the moment of conception, I think the reason I'm pro-life is the image of God is in that child. And I think that happens at conception only because I can't figure out any other arbitrary point at which that would happen. But I can't prove to you what happens at conception, if I'm honest about it. But I think what was helpful to me as I was in a conversation, so that's why I decided we should protect that life. However, I was in a conversation with some other pastors, and they were making the point, not necessarily taking the position, but they're making the point that, you know, the image of God implies free choice. And so it is grievous to God to compel someone to do something against their will, just like it's grievous to God to extinguish a life with the image of God in it. And I hadn't really contemplated, so Enoch, to your point about really talking to someone else and avoiding the soundbite stuff, it didn't change my position, but I think I think about it differently and I would talk about it differently because of that. How do you guys react to that?
Thanks for listening to our first episode in our political discussion series. Listen next week for responses from Pastor Enoch and Pastor Ray to that last question. Visit visionnewengland.org for past episodes and resources, and click donate to partner with us to accelerate evangelism. This program is brought to you by our friends at the Louise Palau Association, who are dedicated to proclaiming the good news, uniting the church, and impacting cities worldwide. God bless you, and thanks for listening.